At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
You are listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with Love Sport's very own Laurie Kellis and the wonderful Sean Wade, who once again has delighted us with his presence because he's on time again. I mean, the form this man is in is scary. He may even get a call up for the game on the weekend because Newcastle take on Chelsea. We're going to be talking about that. But as always, it is a packed show on the Newcastle Fan Show this evening because not only will we get the thoughts of Sean Wade and Laurie Kellis, we are also joined by Chris Woff, the Athletic North East correspondent. Last week, we heard from George Corkin. Now we get to hear from Chris. And what a delight that will be because I know he has a lot of insight around the football club at the minute. So it'll be really good to get him some questions and ask and see what he knows. If we can dig a little bit deeper, I know Sean, for one, will want to talk about that. There was no football on the weekend. Well, there was football, but not real football. It was the international break. There was no game for us to get into. There is a game this weekend. The Premier League is back in action. First, though, how are you both? Sean, a new haircut. And I must say, we're streaming on YouTube if you want to watch. Check it out just alone for Sean's haircut.
I think it was more haircut for the region, wasn't it, really, to be fair? But I'll go back tomorrow and get it finished.
Yeah, there you go. And Laurie, as always, joins us in the studio. Let's start with some good news. Apparently,
I'm fine, thanks, Charlie.
Do you know what? Funnily enough, I thought, I won't ask Laurie, and then I know he'll pull me up on it anyway. But I know you're fine because, unfortunately, believe it or not, I've been with him all day, which, yeah, is a shame for me. But we have to talk Newcastle, that's why, Laurie. And I want to start, the best place to start, rumours are Matty Longstaff signing a new contract.
Well, yeah, it's quality. I mean, I was saying Sean was talking. He wants to talk about real stuff on the show. You know, things that the fans should have issues with, which obviously we'll talk about. But, you know, just reliving a little bit more of that Matty Longstaff goal. I've honestly seen it about 600 times. And, yeah, give him 200 grand a week as far as I'm concerned. I love him.
It's one of them goals where I'm starting to do it now. I'm not a Newcastle fan myself, but obviously I've got a soft spot and I'm keeping my eye out for the results, talking to you lot every week. I'm starting to embellish the goal. Every time I talk about it, I go, yeah, he brings it down, there's a turn, he gets past two players, then it's three players. I'm making more of it, but I don't need to. It was just an absolute classic, wasn't it, Sean?
It was a lovely goal. Like we said last week, it was very reminiscent of his goal in pre-season against St Etienne. But yeah, no, if he can do that week in, week out, then he's be onto a flyer and he'd be knocking on the door of Gareth Southgate, to be fair. So it's all good promising signs. And if they've agreed to a new contract for him, then even better, because it's going to make sort of his wages a bit better than what he was getting. So, and it should settle him and his brother a bit more as well, knowing that the first team and the on first team wages together, you know.
Not to flip it, Newcastle may be kicking themselves if they would have gave him a new contract pre-season. Now he's getting the winners, he might be able to ask for a bit more, eh, Sean?
I think he's well entitled to, you know. He's a cracking player. He's, you know, we haven't seen a great deal of him in the first team, so he's very fresh this season. But his position, his play, the passes that he's delivering, everything seems spot on, and his awareness around him and within the game, you know, and he obviously links up really well with his brother. So between the pair of them, I think, yeah, I would love to see the pair of them playing for England, to tell the truth.
Well, as always, we have to do a bit of house cleaning on the show, do our due diligence, and we was getting into the Longstaff contract. But as always, we want to hear from you. Obviously, you're all delighted about the contract. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp on the same number. And if you are watching on YouTube, put your comments on there. We will endeavour to ask them on this show. Now, it is the international break, and the wonderful thing about this show is we can talk a little bit about Newcastle, but we can talk about important matters away from the football pitch, matters that are going on in and around the community, in and around the club. Sean, I know you're at the heart of many of those and you want to talk about them. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Strawberry Place development?
Yeah, well, what we had was a situation going back into the late 90s, really, and the land was acquired. Well, the lease was acquired by Newcastle United, and that was sort of set for, well, a part of that land. There's like a phase one section and a phase two. So phase two was the section that's sort of around where the metro station is and things. So it was set aside for the development of the Gallagher end. So it was basically to take St James's to a 60,000 seater. We haven't got an option of really extending down the East End stand because of listed buildings on Leeser's Terrace. So the ultimate goal really going forward for the club was to actually extend the stadium to mirror what we've got on the Leeser's end. At the time, Douglas Hall and Freddie Shepherd were in charge of the club, and the owed a mortgage to Barclays Bank basically for the new extension around the Leeser's and sort of the level 7. So the bank refused to lend them any money to further extend the stadium, so they were kind of like in a catch 22 situation. They didn't actually have the money to be able to plough into it because they had already ploughed a lot of money in. So Sir John Hall, who was also a major shareholder, said the best thing to do was sell to a billionaire. He went out fishing for a billionaire and came back with Mike Ashley. So, really speaking, and all the signs were good. So they sold lock, stock and barrel, everything handed over to Mike Ashley. There's been sets of land all around that sort of changed, and there's numbers and things, and I think it's like JR40 or whatever it is, you know, like something that's going through sort of company's house and things. It's quite hard to keep track of everything with the movement that Ashley's done. But it's basically asset stripping the club. So, and the heritage of the club really is for the fans. Mm. So, and when you think about it, I mean, up until when Ashley came into the club, there was like a 10 and a 12 and a 15,000 waiting list for people wanting season tickets. So they could have filled them extra 8,000 seats tenfold. And really speaking, when you think now, when you look at sort of like Tottenham Stadium and everything they've incorporated into their new stadium, so they've got like a microbrewery, they've got a really nice, the long bar, whatever they call it. You know, the
dispensary.
Yeah, they've got everything.
They've got the NFL.
Yeah, they've got everything in-house. Well, they've actually done a really good thing within their stadium, you know, so that's like the microbreweries there and stuff, and then like the shops, the restaurant and all this sort of thing. Things like that in retail space, you know, stuff like that can now be incorporated into the stadium. So if the Gallagher end was sort of extended, then yeah, it could be sort of them features added, and it could be more self-sufficient. So that would bring an extra match sort of day income and everything and stuff like that. If they had like a VIP lounge or whatever on the Gallagher end, etc., then boxes, you know, so... It would generate some good money if it was done the right way. But basically, Ashley sold off the lease to his son-in-law for, I think it's supposedly £9 million. His son-in-law is then putting in planning permission for Strawberry Place to Newcastle Council to develop this bit of land. And when that land's developed, then it's hindering the extension of St James's Park. The main thing is that the height of these buildings as well. I mean, one of them's a 21-storey building. So it's going to, you know, our city's actually renowned and known for the stadium and where the stadium is. There's a lot of people who I've spoken to overseas, you know, and they even refer to it as the Cathedral on the Hill.
And actually, one of the things I wanted to mention, and I want to bring Laurie in, you tweeted about Save Our Skyline as well. It's the things that, you know, obviously reflect, it's not just, it is the football team, but it's the community as well. It's the people, it's the city. And these are the things that you also want to get across, don't you, Sean, that are at fear of being lost?
Well, it's basically the stadium is our cathedral. And it, you know, at the same time, it's iconic to our city where it sits on that slight hill, you know. And it's iconic landmark. You know, you can see it from everywhere around, whether you go up the Rising Sun or you go on the Town Moor. You know, if you're over on concert or anywhere looking across, you know, and you look across sort of the valley of Newcastle, you know, along Scotswood Road in St James's Park's there. And they're actually going to build these buildings around it where it's going to take that aspect away. It's taking away the identity. I would argue that St James's is just as iconic as what the Tyne Bridge is. And you wouldn't build a 21 like story building in front of the Tyne Bridge, you know. It's devastating to our region and our identity as well.
Yeah, I think the thing about it for me with the skyline is, I mean, and you get it with away fans as well who come in, and it's quite unique where the stadium is in Newcastle. You know, like, it's kind of unheard. I mean, you wouldn't build a stadium nowadays where it is because it would just be unthinkable, but that's what makes it really special. But being able to see it is, as you drive across the bridge or, you know, as you come into Newcastle, you can always see the stadium, and it is really special. But the thing about these developments for me is that you can talk about all of the money that Mike Ashley might be taking out of the club from the club shop and various things that we talk about all the time, but in terms of building buildings in front of our stadium, that's not something that can really be undone. So there can be tons and tons of decisions that Mike Ashley will be made, and one day he will be gone, and hopefully and one day, you know, the Sports Direct signs will be gone. But if we're building something in front of the stadium, which is this iconic landmark, then that's not, you can't suddenly just knock these buildings down.
No, no.
That's going to be done, and that's going to be irreparable, and it's going to be a stain on the future of the club that will be there long after Mike Ashley. And I think it's really a tragedy.
It certainly is. And we are speaking to Chris Woff next from The Athletic. We're going to be talking all about that, and we will ask him some questions from that. So we'll get into that a little bit more. Let's quickly turn our attention to the international break, because obviously Newcastle had players that went out on international duty. They're now coming back. Sean, what have you made of it? Because obviously you always hope no one gets injured. Have you seen anything that, you know, that may be taken into this Chelsea game that's pleased you or not pleased you?
I think, well, Almiron, sort of the one, you know, but he's came back, as far as I know, he's uninjured and everything, so he should be fit for Saturday. He is a bit of a concern. I think I saw there was some like 18 games and zero goals, zero assists and stuff, you know, and that's got to be a heavy burden to have on his shoulders, you know. But he came into the squad, and it was under the guise of Rafa Benitez being manager. You know, they both spoke Spanish to it, you know, like, I know he's South American, but the dialogue's very similar. So he was able to communicate a lot better on things, I suppose, with the manager. So I feel a bit sorry for him. It's kind of, is he now sort of in that place of where it's a lot harder for him to actually just go to work and communicate, you know?
It's interesting you mention Almiron, because we are going to speak to Chris about that. Laurie, I want to bring you in, because Martin Allen, who on Love Sport Drive just asked me, when is it not happening for Almiron? And I want to ask, are the fans at all losing patience with him? Are they growing frustrated? Because, you know, I honestly watched him in MLS, thought he was a real good talent, and I still think it does take a time adapting to the league. You know, there is a golfing class between the two leagues. He obviously, the physicality is a huge difference in the leagues, but for Newcastle fans, we need to see some production at some point. When is that line drawing, Laurie, from us to go, time's running out?
Well, the thing is, you've got to appreciate, like, when he came in last season, what a difference he made to the way that we played football. Mm-hmm. He allowed us to, you know, we really didn't have an outlet last season, and this was before Rondon and Perez were really scoring the goals that really kept us up last season. And, you know, he was, under Rafa, he was so good at carrying the ball, allowing us to break with pace, and kind of, he revolutionised the way we played. Now, that's not something that's happened really under Steve Bruce at all. I think his best game was against United, but, you know, he wasn't setting the world alight, and San Maximan was much better at that. You know, he was scaring defenders the way he was running at them. One thing I would say, though, in terms of losing patience with him, from my perspective, I think it's hard to criticise him too much when we know he's not really playing in the position where he's used to. He's meant to be playing through the middle, and he's getting pulled outside onto the wings, which is not really his position. Sam Maximan's much more of a winger, and, you know, they're not really the same player, and they're almost being asked to mirror one another. So in terms of that, I think it's a little bit difficult to be too harsh on him. One thing that I think fans might get a little bit frustrated at is if this simulation continues, because I think when it first happened, the media made a lot of it, and we were sympathetic to him because, you know,
everyone, it happened again, though, this
a
week,
lot of
it?
Young players dive. But yeah, I mean, he's been sent off, and his discipline in general, he's been sent off twice in a year for Paraguay. And the thing is that if he dives, then we've seen it happen so many times with other players, like Zaha never dives, but he still gets called up on it by referees because, you know, of what he maybe did when he was a young player. But honestly, if you look at the statistics now in the last couple of seasons...
Did you mean that you think Zaha never dives, or you were just saying...
that I think he gets pulled up by referees for maybe what he was like as a young player. And actually now, you know, he'll always try and stay on his feet and stuff, I think he still gets pulled up on that. And if I were Almiron, you'd be thinking that this could still be affecting him in 2-3 seasons. If he gets known for diving, it's always kind of a a black mark on your sheet from the referee already. So it frustrates me if he's going to carry on with that sort of the disciplinary issues. But in terms of his actual play, he's always trying his very best, and he's playing in the wrong position, so you can't be too harsh on him, in my opinion.
Well, it's a very good point. And someone who recently wrote an article in The Athletic all about Almiron and how he's getting on under Steve Bruce, it was Chris Woff, and we're talking to him next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Well, we're delighted to be joined by Chris. Chris, your latest article, the recent one in The Athletic, you was talking about, should Steve Bruce drop Almiron? A great article there. But for you, Chris, why has Steve, why has Almiron been less dynamic under Steve Bruce?
Oh, it's a very good question. I think part of the issue is the fact that Newcastle have lost two of their experienced forwards from last season. They had Salomon Rondon and Eusé Pérez to form that front three with Almiron, and the three of them were Spanish speakers, and that really helped them to acclimatise. And those two, having been in the Premier League for a good few years, really knew how to play. Rondon was a focal point of the side, and so far this season Bruce has changed formation a few times. Almiron's found himself out on the right more, and whereas he's been suited throughout most of his career to be now that more central or out on the left. And he's been playing with Joe Linton, who I think has a lot of positive attributes, but hasn't really ever played centrally throughout his career. And we haven't yet seen, other than against Manchester United, a full, basically 90 minutes of Joe Linton, Sam Maximan and Almiron together. So I think there's quite a few factors. Almiron himself as well clearly is low on confidence in front of goal. I think that's affecting him slightly. But I still do think he is an important member of the side.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you more on that, Chris. You mentioned obviously that he's been pulled out to the right-hand side, and everyone you talk to, both on what we've seen and people from who's watching from America and in South America, that he's definitely a central player, really, and that's where his game is going to kind of flourish the most. So I wanted to ask you, A, whether, based on having said that, whether you think he's kind of got a right to be frustrated if he does get dropped, because, you know, he's almost being asked to do things that he cannot do. But then also, I just wanted to touch on his discipline as well, because obviously we've seen him get sent off for Paraguay this week, and is that the second time in a year, I think, and obviously for simulation. So, I mean, to me, that's a concern. We've seen him dive a little bit, and I just wanted to sort of get your thoughts on that.
Well, certainly the second issue is that the diving is something that he needs to address. Twice he's been booked already for simulation in the Premier League this season, against Arsenal early in the season, and then against Manchester United last time out. And on both occasions, it was deserved. And it was frustrating, because certainly against Manchester United, he'd beaten a few players. He looked to be really advancing on the box, and he seemed to just lose a bit of control of the ball and then just go down. So that's something he certainly needs to address. It's frustrating, because I don't actually think physicality has been as much of an issue as we thought it would be with Almiron. He seems to have come to terms with that a lot better. He doesn't go down as easily, although he can go down sometimes and roll a little bit. And I think that's something he certainly needs to address. I'm sure Steve Bruce will be having a conversation with him, particularly after getting sent off for Paraguay. In terms of him being frustrated, yes, I'd say to a degree you probably could say that. I mean, if he isn't used to that role, he is becoming accustomed to it. Bruce has kept faith with him until now, to be fair. He did consider dropping him. I know that in the week up to Leicester, there was a thought process that maybe it's time for Almiron to come out of the team. He stuck with him, even when they shifted to a 4-2-3-1. Still, he was out on the right. And then he persevered. And against Manchester United, I think we saw Almiron's best performance of the season so far, albeit he still looks like he's struggling in front of goal. And I think that it is a decision that Bruce has the luxury of making now, because the other forwards have been training all week. Almiron is now back and is training on Tyneside again, because he came back from Paraguay early. But I just think that Newcastle still haven't sorted out that their issues going forward. They've only scored 5 in 8 games, so Bruce is going to start thinking about how he can extract a greater number of goals. Personally, I think there's more to come from Almiron, and I'd stick with him for now, but I can see why he would be considering possibly changing things.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You've touched on the forward formation there, really, and a couple of people being back now. Obviously, we've saw Andy Carroll with his longest amount of time out on the pitch in the last match, and we know Dwight Gayle's in and around there. Muto wasn't even in the squad last game. So, and Atsu, as I think you touched on in your article, is quite unfortunate to get dropped, actually. And then we talk about Sam Maximan, who was absolutely phenomenal, I thought, in the United game. And there's all these options, but I'm just wondering whether you think, we all know, actually, weirdly, to say this for a Newcastle fan, because it's not been true for a long time, but, you know, I feel quite secure with our defence and kind of how we set up, as long as they're being tactically drilled properly, like against United. But in terms of the forward formation, I'm just curious of how you think would be the best way to kind of utilise all these players that we've got. For example, can Alan Saint-Maximin and Almiron flourish in the same side? What do you do about the likes of Andy Carroll? I know Steve Bruce has actually mentioned potentially putting him and Joe Linton in a front three, which I'm not entirely sure how that would work. So now that all these players are coming back into fitness, I'm just interested in your opinion, kind of how that will come to fruition and whether we will see a bit of a formation change.
Yeah, well, as of a few weeks ago, Newcastle really had very few options in attack, and they almost look like they're going to have the luxury possibly in the next week or two of having all of the forward players certainly fit, which gives Bruce a few options to think about. Andy Carroll, I still think, is probably 2 or 3 weeks away from being able to start games, because I think that Newcastle are going to treat him cautiously, although he's back, and I'm sure himself would say he was ready to start on Saturday. Newcastle won't want to take any risks given the injury problems he's had over the last 2 or 3 years. But I do think he's the sort of player they need a focal point up front. I personally don't think that Joe Linton yet has become that central number nine who can play in the Premier League, that central striker. He could well become that in time, but I think that at the moment he'd be better suited to maybe being out on the left. So until Carroll's fit, though, Joe Linton, I imagine, will stick in that position. I do think that Almiron and Saint-Maximin can flourish in the same team. I just think that one of them needs to get a goal, because at the moment, between all of the forwards Newcastle have, the only person who scored is Joe Linton. The other players haven't actually contributed in that regard yet. Newcastle have a serious lack of goals in this side, and I think once one comes, then that'll really help energise. I agree with you. I thought Saint-Maximin made a big difference against Manchester United. He's direct in his running, which is slightly different to Almiron, but I think him being there helped Almiron and helped Newcastle get up the pitch more quickly. I'll be interested to see what Steve Bruce does at Chelsea, because unlike at St James's Park, where the onus may be on Newcastle, at Chelsea, maybe he may think that playing both Almiron and Saint-Maximin, as well as Joe Linton, although it would give you a lot on the counter-attack, it is also very attacking, really, away from home. So he may decide to put someone like Atsu in just because of the work he plays off the ball. I think, for once, it seems Newcastle have some options, none of who you'd say are miles ahead of any of the others, primarily because none of them score too many goals. But it's better for Bruce to have these sort of headaches. And I'm not sure yet what the right balance is for Newcastle. I'm not sure Steve Bruce knows what the right balance is, but that's something they need to try and find quickly so that Newcastle can keep adding to their points total and try and get ahead of more than just 1 point a game as they've got at the moment.
Chris, I just want to ask you a question about matters off the field now. This time it's a question from our very own Sean Wade.
Hi, Chris. Congratulations on the new position at The Athletic. We had George on the show last week, and he was saying that obviously it's a new partnership between the pair of yous, and you just haven't quite got it figured out just yet. But what he did say was that you were going to be covering more Newcastle United-based stories on and off the pitch. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the whole Strawberry Place development.
Yeah, so the Strawberry Place development, I mean, this is a very complicated story and one which keeps changing over time. So the former land next to St James's Park, which was previously under the ownership of the club, Mike Ashley sold it, and there's been various different developments proposed for that area. At the moment, there's a one for a multi-use, which is for a hotel, a car park, shops, I think, various different parts for it. And basically, the Newcastle United Trust, Supporters Trust, they came out last week and they've sent a legal letter to the council asking that basically that it's reconsidered, because they're saying that one of the issues with it, it's multiple stories, I think it's 20 odd stories, this new building, that it will affect the view of St James's Park was one of their objections, and also the fact that it would potentially prevent Newcastle United expanding St James's Park in the future, because they can't expand at any of the other three sides of the stadium. That's the only one where realistically you could extend it from 52,000. So it's very controversial, this potential development, that the council are now looking again at new proposals which were resubmitted by the developers. And for me, it's something whereby clearly for Newcastle fans who desire to see their club progress in the future, who believe that the stadium is very important
as a viewpoint, as something in the city that symbolises everything that, that they see as positive in the city, that I think that, that it would be controversial if this was to go forward. And it seems that the meeting, the council hearing, sorry, has been pushed back until next month before proposals will be heard. There's been numerous objections. I think there's been hundreds of objections from supporters. And I think it will make everyone think twice before this was to go ahead. It would certainly be controversial if it did go ahead.
Chris, I think this is a subject that we could talk and talk about, certainly, but we know we've only got a short amount of time with you. I did just want to quickly ask, though, obviously it's looking like Matty Longstaff is in line for a new contract after that fantastic winner against Man United. Do you see the Longstaff brothers starting together more regularly, and what will happen when Hayden returns from injury?
I certainly would be surprised if the two Longstaff brothers did not start at Stamford Bridge this weekend, even though Newcastle are going away to Chelsea and it's going to be a very difficult game. The two of them played so well together, and I think Matty's presence lifted the rest of the team. It was Sean's best performance of the season so far, and they complemented each other really well. They brought energy, which is and a bit of dynamism to Newcastle's midfield, which Bruce felt they'd been lacking at certain points. Do I see the pair starting together indefinitely for the rest of the season? No, I don't. I think when Hayden comes back, because he's probably been Newcastle's most consistent player throughout 2019, because he brings a bit of leadership, I think he will come into the side at some stage. But for now, given how well they're both played against Manchester United, it's really they're both their positions to lose, for want of a better term. And I think that, that Newcastle have an additional option there. Bruce really likes Matty Longstaff. He's been impressing from the very start. And having two academy graduates and almost a unique situation, I can't think of another situation where you have two brothers playing together in midfield. Yes, you've had the likes of the Neville brothers playing at fullback for Manchester United, but having two brothers in the engine room for a Premier League side, that's an almost unique situation. And given that they're both homegrown for Newcastle, that's something very special. So I hope to see them go from strength to strength. We've only had a 90-minute performance with Matty. There's a lot more to come, hopefully. But yeah, I do see them both featuring regularly.
Chris, we've mentioned through other things, the Chelsea game, obviously, a little bit. I'm going this weekend, and hoping last away game I went to was Leicester, which wasn't the best. In short, we're a bit short on time, but I was hoping that you could give me something to be optimistic about, and in a scoreline, can I be?
Well, I think that there will be goals. I mean, Chelsea score, but they also concede. I think that Newcastle will be better than they were at Leicester. Hopefully, they've learned from that. They've had a fortnight to prepare for this match. Hopefully, there's a bit more positivity within the camp. If you really push me, I'd say I do expect Chelsea to win. I think maybe 3-1, 2-1 sort of scoreline. But hopefully, that's maybe an overly negative, and you will have a better journey home than you did from the 5-0 at Leicester.
Chris, an absolute pleasure to get you on. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time to speak to someone like you and get that insight. Always a pleasure. Hopefully on the Newcastle Fan Show, you'll come and join us again soon. Chris Woff there, writer for The Athletic. A real pleasure to get him on.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with Sean Wade and Laurie Callis. We just heard there from Chris Woff, the Athletic North East correspondent. Really good to hear from him. So much insight around the club. Great bloke, Chris, and he said he's going to come on more so we can get to hear what he's saying about the football team. Really good one, that. And if you were listening, you can always join in and tweet us and call us. Call us on 0208 7020 558. And guess what? That's exactly what you've done, because Keith has called into the studio. Keith, thank you so much for calling and giving us a little bit of your time. How have you made, and what have you made, excuse me, of Newcastle's season so far?
I don't think it's been a particularly successful start. I think they've had a couple of lucky results, but we'll take them. We're going to need every point that we need going forward. And sadly, I missed Chris as I was literally just dialing in. There's a couple of questions for you, really. I'm particularly upset about the asset stripping that's potentially going on of the club and the sale of the lease of the land or the land behind St James's, which stops his expansion and it takes money out of the club and potentially which is up to £40 or £50 million, but which is insane. But following on from the obvious insanity that is, it points questions to the owners. But what do you feel about owners that then let sort of 25, 30 goals walk out of the club and replace it spending £40 million with an agent which Newcastle seem very familiar with, of a striker that's only scored 8 goals when he's been on fire?
It's, you know, there's, Keith, there's loads of things that's going on at the club that are just baffling. I mean, when you think of, we're not signing Rondon for 16 million when he was like sort of lead goal scorer, player of the season, etc., you know, and he wanted to be there. There's been just some idiotic moves by Mike Ashley, and we can't only say that it's Mike Ashley, you know, for all he says that he doesn't pull the strings and he doesn't choose the players. You know, he chose sort of Joe Linton back in January in any case, and Rafa wasn't best pleased with that decision, you know, but he brought him in any case before the deal was done, before Steve Bruce came in. So I don't understand how Ashley can sort of sit there on sort of exclusive interviews and say that he doesn't have a field in it and stuff when he obviously does. But it just seems bizarre, you know. I mean, selling Perez for 30 million again, top goal scorer, and then bringing in Joe Linton, who he seems to be struggling, but the whole sort of attacking seems to be struggling somewhat. You know, we were saying before, we've got like sort of Almiron playing out of position where he's just definitely not a winger. We've got sort of Andy Carroll that's came in, who was signed unfit. Sort of Chris Wath was saying before that it's sort of he could be maybe another 3-4 weeks off actually getting a start for the game. I personally would like to see maybe Dwight Gayle coming in. I just think he's a good finisher and someone that could maybe even play off sort of Almiron or something, or Andy Carroll for that matter.
I mean, they've got to do something. I mean, Almiron has got a lot of critics, but the Perez and Rondon scored their goals, or most of their goals, when Almiron was creating the space because he's running around like a lunatic.
Mm-hmm.
And this season, sadly, has been more of a headless chicken, but I still think that the pace that he brings, if they're going to double up with Maxim, then it's really good. And it will hopefully create opportunities, but there is still nobody that will score goals. And sadly, Gayle, I would agree, Gayle needs a chance, but he's never done it. Joe Linton is, at best, he's going to be secondary to a big number 10. It's worrying that Newcastle's season is going to be dependent on Gayle, who's never scored in the Premier League,
mm-hmm.
and Andy Carroll has never been fit in the Premier League. With Linton playing secondary to a fit Andy Carroll, you know, 10 years ago, might have been quite interesting. But it's just depressing, and it shows what, you know, Ashley's brought this club down to and just absolutely destroyed it. It's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
I think in terms of that argument, the thing that really frustrates me in terms of, it's obviously we know how long it took us to break our transfer record and all this, and obviously I think it speaks a lot when you look at the fact that we've spent £40 million on a striker and it wasn't necessarily embraced by the fans as being this incredible thing. We've spent £40 million on a striker and everyone was like, well, actually seems a little bit underwhelming. And it, in a way, was refreshing to see a little bit of a risk being taken on a player, like spending the money. But I also think you've got to look at these being calculated risks, because we've allowed our two top scorers out of the club and not really replaced them. We were talking before about potentially having the opportunity to sign Joseph Martinez, who obviously had played with Almiron in Atlanta. And if we could have signed someone like that, who probably, given his goal scoring, albeit in the MLS, would have commanded a similar figure, in my opinion, to Joe Linton, maybe £40 million. Neither of them have played in the Premier League. Neither of them are proven. But that sort of signing, to me, would have seemed like far more intelligent one than Joe Linton, who we knew Rafa didn't want anyway. And you're kind of looking to build around the squad that you've already got. And someone who's already been proven at having a really fruitful partnership with Almiron. So as much as I agree that, you know, we obviously needed to sign strikers and, you know, we haven't got a talisman and we can't rely on Dwight Gayle, and all of this I think is true, but there just doesn't seem to be. And I personally think with Joe Linton at the minute, it almost wouldn't matter who would be playing up front, because we haven't been playing the way that can feed his style of play. He's essentially sometimes been playing as a defensive midfielder, holding the ball up.
Mm-hmm. I think the way he's dropped is true, but his style of play still gives him 8 goals a season, his best season.
It's
8 goals is his best score.
Uh-huh.
So that's what Ashley has bet the football club on, letting 25 goals walk out the door and signing a striker that's only ever scored 8. So people talk about the Troy Deeneys of this world. You could have Troy Deeney in any 1-from-2 at Bournemouth, and you could have probably snapped both of them up for 40 million quid.
The thing is,
and then you wouldn't have even had to spend the money on Maxim either. the lack of foresight and understanding that it's difficult to put the ball in the net, irrespective of how they're playing, and then, you know, let the defence play kamikaze football, which Bruce seems quite good at.
Keith, would you have liked to see us take a risk on someone like Daniel Sturridge, someone with, like, you know, like Premier League credentials, albeit not being in the best form over the last couple of seasons? But he's obviously gone for pittance over to, like, Turkey or somewhere. But, you know, someone who was available who had Premier League goals, is that what you're asking for? Or?
No, you need someone who's fit. There are many teams that would have given you their best striker for 40 million in the bottom half of the Premier League and do it. And as Sean said before,
I don't think that's true.
16 million.
You think that for £40 million that you could have signed the likes of, like, Callum Wilson, for example? There's no chance.
I think 40 million quid would have got you Callum Wilson.
Bournemouth would never have sold us Callum Wilson.
I think Watford would give you Troy Deeney for 20 million. He'd hold the ball up like Deeney would. And then if you'd given the 30 million from Perez, and if Rafa certainly had certainly been there, then that would have been spent on a player to compliment him. And Rafa would have had, probably would have taken Joe Linton, but at 20 million, he's not a striker, and he's not a £40 million worth. £40 million on a striker is reasonable business. Not £40 million on, not a number 10, but a number 2 striker is quite scary for a football club.
I think
you bet the house, which he likes doing, on someone who scored 8 goals a season in his best year.
The thing is, with the amount of TV money coming in, really speaking, the Joe Linton signing would have been fine had we have kept Perez, had we have kept Rondon, for that matter, had we have kept Rafa, because also then you bring into the play of, like, sort of Almiron, you know, who's sort of Spanish speaking. So his communication with sort of the free up, like him being part of the free up front, and then also his manager on the sidelines, all speaking Spanish to a degree, obviously was helping him. And now I kind of feel a bit sorry for him. He was brought in £20 million signing, and now his sort of strike force and kind of his camaraderie and stuff and friendship is all just walked all, like, well, has been removed from the club just in one foul swoop.
It's desperately sad what has been allowed to happen there, and it does smack of what happened with McLaren when they went out and spent 80 million quid on footballers who'd never played together, never played in the Premier League. And sadly, we all know what happened.
It's echoing it already this early on in the season. You know, the warning signs are there, Keith.
It certainly is. Keith, we really appreciate you calling into the show. Please call us again. Always a pleasure to talk to you. And we want to hear from all the fans what they think, what's going on at the club, on and off the pitch. You can get involved. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us 0208 70 20 558. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Ollie Salt from the Daily Star, all about that game with Chelsea on the weekend.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
This is the Newcastle Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined by Sean Wade and Laurie Callis. And what a packed show it's been tonight. Firstly, we spoke to Chris Woff, the Athletic North East correspondent. Last week, we spoke to Jules Colkin. Now, we're speaking to Ollie Salt, the sports reporter for the Daily Star, all about the game on the weekend against Chelsea. And Chelsea, they're going well. It's starting to click. They're starting to maybe hit top form. Clean sheets are becoming a worry. They're conceding goals, but they're just that side of the top four. They got that first win in the Champions League under Frank Lampard. Now they come across the mighty Newcastle, and this is a different prospect altogether. Ollie, what are your thoughts on the fixture on the weekend?
Yeah, it's like you said, from Chelsea's point of view, it's they are conceding too many goals. Newcastle aren't going to provide that goal threat, I think, that's really going to trouble Frank Lampard. But it'll be an interesting one to see if they can put up the same sort of resilient display as they did against United, that then saw them nick a goal late on through Matty Longstaff. But really, you would expect a Chelsea win on Saturday.
Yeah, we've actually had a few close calls in the last couple of seasons where I seem to remember a bit of a fluky Willian goal. But, you know, there's a few times where we should have beat you. And it's actually really frustrating as a Newcastle fan, because we tend to put in performances against the top teams and then look completely average against the likes of Watford and Brighton. I'm just wondering whether... do you think Chelsea under Frank Lampard have that sort of clinical edge where there's teams who might set up how we might at the weekend, where we're, I mean, we don't know which Newcastle's going to turn up, let's be fair, but we're clearly going to try and have a similar game plan to what we did against Man United. And I know Chelsea are playing a lot better than Man United are at the minute, but under Frank Lampard, do you think there is that mentality where Chelsea can win when they're not playing very well, even when they can't get in behind? Do they have sort of the players, and you know, we know how many Tammy Abraham scored already, but do they have the players to have that killer instinct, you know, when there's not necessarily like a clear outlet for a goal?
I think in terms of nicking goals and nicking results when they're not playing well, I don't think they're at that level yet. I still think the team need to be firing on all cylinders for us to be picking up wins, as sort of our early season form showed, and simply because I don't think Lampard's cracked it defensively yet. The team are conceding too much, so they need to be firing on all cylinders going forward to ensure they're winning games. But as you mentioned about Newcastle coming in, and what we expect would be, you know, setting up shop and just simply trying not to concede. The good thing about Chelsea at the moment is every game there's a feeling that they're going to score goals. With Mount now a key player in the team, he's got goals in him. Abraham, you know, I'm not sure anyone expected him to have the start he's had, but, you know, he looks like scoring every game. So I don't think scoring goals, even against, you know, dogged teams that are going to come and sit in and try and frustrate, I don't think scoring goals is the issue. It's just at the back, clean sheets. You know, I think they've picked up one clean sheet this season, which speaks volumes about the defensive form at the minute.
Just going in with sort of Chelsea's start of the season, I mean, like sort of coming in before the season and then the appointment of Frank Lampard, I think it took a lot of people by surprise. A lot of sort of, like, I live over in Southwest London, so in the local pub there's a few sort of Chelsea fans get in there and stuff, and everyone I spoke to before Frank being appointed, they were all saying, oh, he's too inexperienced, etc. I know he needs another couple of years under his belt. So I mean, really, when he came in, I think he's doing a great job. I do think he does need more time, but I hope that he gets a chance with Chelsea to do it. He was phenomenal as a player for yous, and I think he can be a phenomenal manager if he's given the chance. But what's your thoughts on it? Do you think he's got a strong future at Chelsea, or do you think that it'll get to a point of where they just won't give him the opportunity, like what they've done with all the other managers?
Well, no, I'd like to think that this appointment marks really a new era for the club. The conditions that Lampard's taken the job in this season means, barring, you know, a real disaster where, you know, the sort of position Manchester United are in at the minute, where, you know, potentially you're looking at relegation, then his job would be under threat. But the good thing is the transfer ban and losing Hazard means that he's going to get to see this season out no matter what, really. Mm-hmm. You know, even if they ended up finishing as low as maybe 7th, 8th, he will be in charge this time at the start of next season. But really, there's quite a lot of optimism that he could, you know, he could very realistically finish in the top four this season, simply because of what looks like quite poor competition in and around those places at the minute. You know, Tottenham are in free fall. United, you know, they're not even up there at the minute. They're down in 12th. Arsenal, you know, they're playing okay at the minute, but they've still got weaknesses where you feel like they're not even certain to finish there. So the real poor competition in and around, you know, at the moment, Chelsea look in quite a strong position to go on and finish in the top four, which would be a really successful season because of the poor conditions Lampard's taken the job in.
I want to talk about your young players, because obviously all teams love to see their academies doing well, and obviously it was incredible for us a few weeks ago when Matty Longstaff scored that winner against Manchester United. Got to give it another mention. I want to ask, obviously we can all see that what the likes of Hudson-Odoi, Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount can do, and it's actually really interesting to look at, you know, in the next couple of years, how much of a backbone Chelsea might have in the England team, kind of like what Spurs maybe had a couple of seasons ago. But I wanted to ask you about Tomori, because a lot of people were talking when he got picked for the squad, or he wouldn't have got in if he wasn't a Chelsea player. There's people like James Tarkowski, who's been left out, who, you know, has been in really good form, but obviously plays for what you would call a lesser club. So has he got in on that screamer that he scored, and he's kind of got in on the coattails of Tammy Abraham maybe, or, you know, is he really the real deal, and will we look at him as potentially in the future being one of the Premier League's best ever centre-backs?
No, he Tomori, I can understand why people would say the argument about, you know, now he's playing for a big club, etc., he's just getting in, but from what I've seen of him early on, I mean, he really does look like he's going to be some player. I think at the start of the season, with the centre-backs at Chelsea, Zouma, Christensen, I think he would, and Rudiger, who's obviously been injured, but, you know, there's a chance he could play Saturday, I believe, but it's a little bit unlikely. But with him there as well, at the start of the season, you would have said Tomori was probably fourth choice right at the back, but because of how leaky they looked early on, he ended up coming into the side, and he, without Rudiger there at the minute, he probably looks the best centre-back Lampard's got. Against Liverpool in particular, I mean, Mohamed Salah was in his back pocket for most of the game. He was really impressive that day, but then he does show a few signs of naivety and inexperience at times, like he did at Southampton before the international break. He didn't have his best game. But in terms of in the future, he's very promising, and I'm sure he'll be a regular in that England side for years to come.
Well, Ollie, obviously it is the huge clash on the weekend. Chelsea versus Newcastle United. We have to put you on the spot. We need a score prediction from you, and you do have to remember this is the Newcastle fan show.
I've got to be kind. I'll go...
you can be cruel to be kind.
Cruel.
What are you going to 3-1 say, Ollie?
Consolation goal for you boys.
Oh, 3-1, strong and bold, but Ollie, we weren't expecting any less. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. Ollie Salt there, sports reporter for the Daily Star. Always good to have a chat with him. He says 3-1 Chelsea. I now turn my attentions to the guys in the studio. I will start with you, Sean. How do you think the game will play out, and what is your score prediction for the weekend? And bearing in mind, Sean, I want to throw a stat at you. This may change how you think it's going to go. When Laurie has gone to a game away from home, Newcastle got beat 5-0. So he's going this week as well.
Yeah, I never
Newcastle
went to
away from home. What do you think? Yeah, when he didn't go to Spurs, Newcastle won. Just saying, throwing it out there.
Well, I've wanted to see it all season, and I think we're going to have Matty and Sean on the start at the start of the pitch, and I think they're both going to get a goal each. And I'm going to go for Chelsea 1, Newcastle 2.
Ooh, there you go, 2-1.
Do you know what? I was actually going to go for that, but I can't pick the same.
Of course you can.
Do you know what? We can get Aaron Stokes to have a word with Ollie anyway.
yeah, we know people.
do you know what? I'm going to go more optimistic. I'm going to say they're not even going to score. 2-0 Newcastle.
Get in.
And so it's genuinely what you both think, yeah? You fancy your chances in this one.
Do you know what? I think we'll probably win this game and then lose to, who have we got next week? I don't know, someone terrible.
The thing is that we've got Steve Bruce at the helm. So it could be anything, couldn't it, to tell
why,
the truth.
Listen, why not? You beat Man United, you've beat Spurs already this year, maybe in different results in the other games, but nothing to fear. It will be a cracker either way, and what will definitely happen, I can tell you one thing, we'll be reviewing the game next week on the Newcastle Fan Show every Wednesday 7 to 8 right here on Love Sport Radio. Tune in and you can talk everything about Newcastle, because it's all we want to know. It's the Magpies and the Magpies only. This has been the Newcastle Fan Show with Sean Wade and Laurie Callis. We will see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hold up. At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.